Welcome back to Classical Guitar Insider. It's your host, Brett Williams, everybody. I'm back after a big hiatus. I'm sorry about the break. I'll explain it later. But for now, this show is sponsored by SavageClassical.com. S-A-V-A-G-E, Classical.com. Go there for all your guitar needs. Richard Sage in Bayshore, New York will give you the guitar of your dreams and the accessories you desire. Also sponsored by audibletrial.com/insider. Who needs to read anymore? Don't do it. I'm reading right now. I'm commuting. I'll explain that later too. Don't read. Don't even learn. Just learn enough so that you can read the street signs. All right, then the rest of it, have someone pour information into your ear. How about the new Harry Potter? I haven't read it. Anybody read it? Is it even, it's just a play in London, right? But, you know, did she write it or not? Just be straight with me. I'm not going to read a review of it because I don't want somebody else's nonsense in my ear while I read something. I'm reading it anyway. It looks like a short book. It's not like the fourth book, right? Wasn't that like a whole, yeah. Anyway, the show is also sponsored by CasperTrial.com/insider. Casper Trial. A couple of you bought mattresses. Are you serious? You guys are my favorite. I got a lot of money for some mattresses. Donation, you can always donate at BrettWilliamsMusic.com. That's Brett with one T. BrettWilliamsMusic.com. Go to the podcast section. Donate on the right. The reason I'm tired, the reason my voice is hoarse. Did I say that William Cramer Henderson is going to be on the show? William Cramer Harrison is going to be on the show. He is a luthier. What that means is that he makes stringed instruments with his bare hands. And the quality of this recording should more than make up for the quality of the Sergio Assad recording. I don't know what happened. I told you I got a friend that I'm going to work with at some point, but I've been very busy. I'll explain that in a minute. But this was actually one of my favorite interviews ever. This man is sweet, knowledgeable, and warm. I really liked this interview, and I love the quality of it. I haven't heard the playback more than just a couple of sections. There's maybe your normal, you know, every once in a while there's that little fuzz noise that happens with Logic, but that's the way it goes, right? That's the way it goes. I have a life. And my life right now is that I'm an assistant teacher in the Bronx. Okay? Am I protecting my time? I don't know. I'm just trying to make some money so that I can live. I'm going to be 40 in February. It's time for me to, you know, just grow up and give up my dreams. No, that's not at all what it is. I'm not giving up my dreams. I just practiced for, you know, 3 hours today. I do have to get up very early in the morning if I want to go to the gym before work, but I've decided to give that up and go to the gym after work. But I'm starting my private and after school guitar lessons next week. On top of this, this is a 5-hour commitment from 9:30 to 2:30. It's in the Bronx. It is physically and emotionally a little taxing at this point. It's getting better and better. I've been doing it for 2 weeks. I had a wedding in Austin. Simon Powis, congratulations. And I'm doing what I can, which isn't much. I didn't practice for the guitar for the first time in probably a decade. I didn't touch the guitar for 2 weeks, and that hurts. I touched it today for the first time. I'm getting around to the podcast today for the first time. It's my Saturday. And this is what I'm doing with it. So, you know, make sure you donate or make sure you, buy a mattress or buy some Warby Parker trial.com/insider glasses. You do it up. Help out. Because it's your fault that I have to do this. Just joking. Keep listening. Don't feel bad. It's okay. I feel like a man. It's a lot of fun getting up with everybody, being part of the municipality. It is a public school. It is in the Bronx. I am taking the 7 to the 5, and I got my coffee, and I'm packed in the train like a sardine, and it's just, you know, it feels good. I feel like a real dude. The school is challenging. It's challenging. There's been some, you know, there's been some situations that, that I can't wait to share with you. And I think it's going to be fun for us. It's a new adventure, you know, and that's what I'm thinking. I think that was part of the thing that I was just in a rut about. I was like, just getting up and releasing a new album into the ether is not something that, that was the most fulfilling thing to me. I think that this will be good. This will be good. It's at least going to make more stories. And if there's anything I like, it's stories. Living in a story. And this is that. Okay? Having to tell people to put the sharp end of a compass away when they're angry. People calling each other the N-word. You know, I mean, what's it like? It's what it sounds like. All right? Unclench your fist. I had to tell a kid several times. Give me my fucking backpack back. That kind of stuff, right? We're talking serious stuff. You know, and if there's anybody from the school who's listening, I hope you understand that, you know, thank you so much for everything you've done. Everybody who works there is absolutely amazing. But I am going to have to share these stories without, you know, sharing the... I'm never going to say anything disparaging about the school itself. It's a great school. It's ran really well. It's a loving environment for kids that, you know, most of the kids are fine. Some of the kids obviously are a little starved in that department. You've got to be kidding me. They seriously have not made an ounce of noise all day. I know you guys can't hear it, but I can. It's distracting. I'm talking about the construction site next to the house. Anyway, but the kids who do make noise, boy. and I know that, you know, there's probably some sort of policy about how I'm never supposed to talk about things, blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't care. I'm going to talk about them. That's part of the pay, in my opinion. Part of the currency is the fact that I get stories and I get to tell them. Am I going to give out the names of them or what class they're in or even the location or name of the school? Absolutely not. But I am going to share my stories on my show because it's something that's relevant to the show. I'm sure that a lot of you out there have thought about going into, teaching. A lot of you out there, the only way that you can teach is to teach in the public sector. I'm getting a lot of experience. I'm becoming a better teacher. I'm becoming more empathetic because of it. And I want to talk. I want to share that. Really badly, because I think it's something that's important for people to hear, this little story of mine that now I'm become a public school teaching assistant, which is basically, I approached it the day that it all went down, the day that I was going in for my first day of work. I decided I need to come up with just sort of a basic mantra or basic, not a game plan really, but just, you know, sort of an overall idea of the way that I would approach this, because that's not what I did in the past. I went in with just my personality and thinking that that would fix everything. And in some cases it did, but, or energy. I have a lot of energy. In this case, I knew I needed to just be very uniform in my approach and be very consistent. And so I decided that I would approach everything with love and kindness, which is not something that I always did in my other jobs. And, you know, that's the thing. I thought about it and, you know, a lot of these kids have not been exposed to that. So I thought that that's the way I would do things. Whereas when I was teaching, you know, privileged kids on the Upper West Side, which I still am going to do. I'm going to have 12-hour days coming up next week. You know, a lot of times you could get very big in front of them. And just frankly, using intimidation tactics, you know? Nothing too grand or scary, I hope. But definitely a little rough around the edges. And not really putting up with too much shit. But that's not going to work over here because I think that some of these kids are a little numb to that. So I have been just very sweet. If I need to take a kid out of the room, it's never like, all right, get up now. It's always like, you know, I always start by saying that they're safe and that they, we're just going to go out. We're going to take some fresh breaths, that they are not in trouble. I make sure to tell them they are not in trouble, that they are safe and that everything's okay. I have to tell them that several times, but generally speaking, that does get them out of the seat eventually. And more importantly, when they do get out of the seat and they do go outside with me, they immediately open up. And I think I'm connecting with the kids. I'm certainly getting a lot of kudos from the beautiful people that I work with there. I think this is what I do. I think it's what I've done for 20 years, and it's part of my experience teaching. So unbeknownst to me, I was getting good at working with kids, and now I'm good at it to the point where, and it's my resume. You know, what did I try to do? Advertising and stuff like that. They were like, you'd never have it. My resume, I am a teacher. I am a performer, and I am a teacher. And so that's what I can do. And I'm doing this job, getting into it, and it's sort of immediately sort of commanding the respect of the kids and my peers was sort of refreshing, and it was pretty cool, I thought. So I definitely didn't go into this situation like I did with the bartending, where I felt like a fish out of water and I was just sort of faking it. There's none of that here. I don't have to fake anything. I feel very confident. My approach is basically hands clasped behind my back, always the hint of a smile, sort of channeling Tim Gunn from the, you know, the gay guy from the Runway Show, right? I mean, that's sort of what I've kind of, that's kind of what I'm doing. Just like, so what's this, you know, just what does he say? I kind of do that and without the accent. And I approach it with that. Just very, if they drop a pencil, I pick it up for them. If they're coming to the door, I open it for them. And as they come in, I close the door gently behind them. I just try to be not gentle, but just kind at all times. And what I've noticed is there's never been a situation where I've necessarily lost my cool, but you know, I have a face, it turns red and it's a rather large face. And there's been situations where I've had to address the class, you know, in a loud voice. I definitely have a voice that carries a little more than the other teachers. And it can be effective in one way, but more or less when the kids start to feel fear, when they feel aggression coming in their direction, there's some of them that really shut down and, you know, and that's where I think I don't want to ever say kill them with kindness. That's such a dumb, I hate that phrase. Kill them with kindness. It's what kill them with kindness. I mean, I guess it makes sense in some cutesy sort of way, but that's not what I'm doing here. I'm not trying to kill anybody with kindness or battle someone or get something over on somebody. Kill them with kindness is such bullshit. Sorry, I don't know why I don't like that phrase. It's an approach, and I don't know if it's going to work or not, and I don't know if it's something I can do. But the main thing is that when I would leave my jobs in the past, at the end of the day, and I had raised my voice or scared someone or had been stern or mean in order to get my way out of the class, that I didn't like teaching. And I like doing this. Like, I like leaving a situation knowing that I was kind and that I was in control and that I was loving. And these kids are not giving that back to me a lot of the times. And I just want to go home knowing that that's what I did at the end of the day. So that's the approach, and we're going to see if it works. You know? And there's some emotional stuff. You know, so one of the kids, his mom is a prostitute. You know, so I it's like I got to go home knowing that I do little things. Like I do things where, you know, if I apologize, for example. So if a kid gets up and another teacher told him he can go to the bathroom and I see him get up and I say, hey, what are you doing? You know, or something like, not really that, but like, you need to sit back down. And he goes, someone told me to get up. I apologize. I go up to him. I apologize. I make sure that he hears the apology. And I'm saying he and she. The boys are certainly not the only ones to act up. And, you know, I don't know if they're really used to hearing that all the time. But this was, it's been 2 weeks. It's been a pretty big 2 weeks. So let's do this. This will be fun. This will be an adventure. We'll see how it all irons out. The quartet, I'm talking to them. I'm trying to get, you know, another show back together this weekend. I've been working on it. And now that I'm getting up early, you know, I've been up since 7 on Saturday. It's 2:30. I got the rest of the day to kill. And I already knocked out a couple of birds here. So I don't know. This might be okay. All right. So stick in there with me, guys. In the meantime, listen to this wonderful interview where, I mean, the guy just has William Kramer Henderson, Harrison. I'm so sorry I keep calling you Henderson. I don't know why. Oh, because my guitar maker is William Henderson. Anyway, different guy. This guy talks a lot, you know, about the history of you know, European Alp sort of wood transportation practices. You're going to have to deal with the fact that my brain is not going to work necessarily as quickly for the first couple of weeks until it catches up with my deranged sleep pattern. Okay? I'll talk to you guys, I'll talk to you guys after the show. Here's William Kramer Harrison.
You know, overall, there are two schools. There are schools that are trying to change the guitar. It's almost like a Supreme Court justice. There's constitutionalists and there's activist judges.
Right.
And so would you consider yourself like a constitutionalist, a person that kind of sticks to what, you know, the old ways, the old guitar making ways, or are you looking for innovative design?
I'm looking to keep the traditional approach.
Right.
But I'm not closed to new concepts and design.
Right.
I tend not to use new concepts, double tops, or any other major changes in the basic structure and function of the guitar.
Right.
I guess when you grow up listening to a certain kind of music, you tend to be drawn to that type of music, and mm-hmm. the same is true with an instrument. I grew up as an adult listening to classical guitar, and my first experiences were with a friend at Penn State when I was in college who studied flamenco in Spain, and he had a Santos Hernandez. And that was my first experience with
Santos Hernandez was the name of the maker.
Was the name of the maker, and he was the man
uh-huh.
in terms of flamenco guitars and classic guitars. He, in fact, he made Andre Segovia's Manuel Ramirez.
He made the Ramirez.
He made the Ramirez as the head of the shop of Manuel's shop in Spain. It was made originally as an 11-string, and Segovia came by needing a guitar for a concert. He didn't feel like his guitar, the one he currently had, was...
what do you have at that point? A Hauser, probably?
No.
What his issues were?
Then. He was, like, young. He was, like, 17, 18 years old.
Segovia was?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. So
and
this is like...
he wanted to borrow a guitar.
Right.
From Ramirez. And they had this 11-string that they had. There was a big story behind it about it was for a specific guy. They had a falling out with this guy. They changed the guitar to a 6-string. And they liked Segovia. They liked the way he played. They gave him the guitar.
Yeah.
And that was his first Ramirez. And he played that guitar for quite a while until it finally gave up the ghost, as it were, got real tired. And then that's when he got his first Hauser, 1937 Hauser, I think it was.
Yeah. Is that the one that's in the Met?
Yeah. They're both in the Met.
Yeah.
And this Ramirez was a basic fan-braced Taurus-type bracing system. Taurus was the originator of the of the first fan bracing system that was based on a large kite, what they call a kite, or the spread of the fan braces in the guitar itself. There were other people who had used fan braces
before. You know when he was doing that? Or
Taurus, 1850s, okay. 1860s.
Okay.
Somewhere in that range.
But he was the original. And what did they do before that? Do you know?
Before that, they had all kinds of
strange bracing.
Strange bracing.
But fan bracing took hold for 100 years.
Yeah. And there were people, Panormo, I think, and other makers in France who used fan bracing. But it was tighter. It was, the fans were closer together, and it was down the middle of the face of the guitar.
Yeah.
As Taurus opened it up so the fans were closer to the sides and had cut-off braces at the bottom to control the top, the movement of the top. And he was playing with that and actually stuck to that through his whole career.
So it controlled the stuff at the bottom controlled the movement of the face?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Made it behave better.
Yeah, one of the things that people, you know, especially people that are listening that aren't guitarists,
yeah.
One of the things they have a hard time understanding is really just the way a guitar works. It's the first thing I explain to even little kids.
Little
students. It's like, this is the way it works. It doesn't go into the sound hole, it comes out of the sound hole.
Right.
The top of the guitar vibrates.
Right, correct.
With the tone that you're playing.
That's right. And the air.
And go ahead.
The air that goes in and out of the sound hole allows the top to move.
Right.
If there was no sound hole, the top wouldn't move. It would.
Is that right?
As much.
So what do you think about those designs then? I had a guitar. Well, I know what happened. I didn't end up going with it. It was a German maker. He was young.
Yeah.
I think he was even in his 20s. And it was a beautiful guitar. And it had a real neat sound. I bought it from, you know, what is it, GSP in San Francisco. And it was going to be my new guitar. I guess it did have holes on the face. As long as there's a hole on the face, you're going to get vibration. But if you don't have a hole, the vibration's...
Right.
Well, nothing's going to happen.
nothing can happen because...
The sound is trapped in there.
Yeah. It's a closed space.
Eventually it'll blow up. Yeah, so that's
the loudest guitar in the world.
Wow.
And the size of the hole will determine what response the guitar will favor. Like if you look at a Martin D18 or D28.
Small hole.
Large hole.
Oh, large hole.
Four and a quarter inches. And that favors the treble response. And they did that because the guitar was so large, they had no trouble with any bass response.
Right.
Because it was a big box.
And this was a guitar that was designed to be an acoustic guitar.
Yes, yes.
So as far as that, I mean, that's the thing.
So if you close the hole size down, you get more bass response.
Yeah, because the tone has more time. To enrich itself in the chamber.
Right.
And if you have the bigger hole, there's less time for the tone to enrich itself, and you get higher end.
Yeah.
And the higher end you get, the more clearer you get.
Yeah.
But at the sacrifice of what we consider warmth.
Right.
Right. So that's the balancing act. That's a balancing act. How big does sound hole size play into what you do? You got pretty big sound holes, don't you?
No.
Like normal?
3 3/8.
3 3/8 is a normal size sound
normal
hole?
Normal sound hole size, 89 or 86 to 89 millimeters.
Yeah, and educate me, because I don't know shit. I don't know anything about this.
Yeah,
so it's like, I think I know some things. Like I kind of get it, but you know, maybe a lot of this can be you correcting me or helping me understand it and helping whoever's like me out there, which is probably a lot of people. But like you're saying, so... One of the things, so the two major things we've discussed, three major things are the bracing, which we will always come back to because that's got to be, that is, as you said, that controls the vibration,
the movement
of the top. So we'll definitely come back to that because that's where I think the artistry is.
Right. It's part of it.
It's
what everybody thinks is.
That's what I think.
Is the secret.
Yeah, you the know, secret
what's
is
your
the bracing.
Bracing system. Yeah.
Like in the John Williams video where you know, Greg Smallman is sitting there and they're pondering the bracing.
Yeah, yeah.
5 minutes, and it's one of the most special moments in that thing, in that little video, Sevilla concert. But the what you're talking about, what we're on now, is we're keeping people on track, talking about bracing. And then we went straight to the top of the guitar, which I want to come back to.
Right.
But right now we're talking about the sound hole, which is fun because I think that the kids, you know, when you first see a guitar, one of the first things your eye is drawn to is the sound hole in the rosette.
Right.
So, you know, let's like almost like children.
like
I'm a, we are children.
We are.
I mean, we are people who have given up all hope of growing up, and we're living in this magical land where, you know,
where we
sound holes
music.
Are the most important thing, and we make music. Yeah. But sound holes, right there with sound hole, 3 3/8
inch,
three and three eighths inches, right? Not feet,
or. 86 to 89 millimeters.
Okay. Millimeters is beyond.
Yeah, I think in millimeters because it's...
Because that's... You do action.
That's what... That's what instrument makers think in, usually. All violins are all in millimeters, mostly.
Do you know what the millimeter of the F sound holes are, a violin?
No. No, I don't make violins.
I know you don't. What do you think about that, those jazz guitars that had the violin sound holes? I mean, what's that about?
It's about arch top. It's an arch top, and in order to not change the arching of the top, you can't put a round sound hole. You can, but they tend to use F holes on the sides. Why?
Well, that's cool. You can't. So when you have an arch top, you can't put the sound hole there. Why?
In the center?
Yeah.
Well, because it's going to interfere with the shape and the strength. Of the arch.
Right.
The arch is what gives you the strength.
Yeah, that's essentially you're carving the keystone out of an arch.
Yeah.
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 Interesting. Okay, so that's that's why you don't see that in jazz guitars all the time.
That's one of
the
reasons.
Well, also, you got to make room for the pickups.
Also, you have
I'm talking about those D'Angelos
braces.
And stuff.
Yeah, those two braces in an arch top.
Mm.
Two types. One, it's got... One style has two braces going down one side and the both sides of the arch.
Yeah.
The other one crosses them.
Yeah.
And so there's a cross brace and a straight brace going down the length of an arch top.
Right.
But it's basically the arch that does the trick.
It's the arch that does the trick in a jazz guitar.
That holds the bridge in place because it's not glued down.
Right.
And the pressure of the strings presses on the top. And an arch top is more of a rhythm guitar anyhow. Mm-hmm. Originally was designed as an orchestra guitar.
Right. You're supposed to just lightly play.
Percussion, rhythmic.
Sitting there right next to the drums.
Non-melody.
Yeah. On the right.
It's
not making a big deal out of yourself.
Right.
Non-melody. Yeah, exactly.
Django
style, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Django rhythm style.
Well, yeah.
When he's playing rhythm.
He's the one who started turning it into jazz, you know.
Started playing melodies.
And melodies, right.
I didn't even think about that, but he has to be the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it wasn't a melodic instrument.
No.
You know, thinking about that, though, as far as jazz guitars, you know what I have a hard time understanding is what the why they have to hollow it out anyway. Because it seems to just cause problems when you hollow an instrument out, especially when you're using pickups. I mean, are they just doing that because they're going back to that old style of, like you're saying, the turn of the century guitars that were designed to just be a little, a little offbeat rhythm guitar?
I don't know. I think it's an outgrowth of the violin family instruments.
Yeah, but it's you end up getting so much feedback.
Yeah.
When you have a hollowed out guitar that you can't turn it up as much as you can with a Les Paul that's completely solid. You know,
right?
I don't understand the logic
in
it. Is it just traditionalism in design? As far as what I'm asking is why would they continue to make hollowed out guitars when they have issues with feedback in the amplifiers? I don't know.
I don't do electronics.
Yeah, we don't do it. Like, we're not electronic people.
No, I don't do pickups. I don't do.
I do
setups on electric guitars.
There you go.
The concept of an electric guitar, like you were saying before, in terms of the feedback and the rest of that, is you have a solid body, like a block of wood, and a pickup, and the string moves, and the string is picked up by the magnets, the pickup,
right,
and that's it.
The more
movement in the overall guitar, the less you're going to have in the way of picking up from the strings.
Yeah.
Ideally, a concrete bar or an I-beam would be a great electric guitar because there's absolutely no movement.
Right.
The only thing that's moving is the strings.
Yeah.
And there's nothing going back into the instrument to be absorbed by the instrument.
Right.
What you're talking about with an archtop is a lot of the guitars is absorbing the vibration of the moving string.
And yeah.
It becomes more difficult to pick it up.
It does.
With the pickups.
And it still strings too.
And the feedback is the resonance of the air volume inside the instrument. And the sound is, if you have a bass player or a bass drum right next to you,
you're in trouble.
You're in trouble because that's picked up by the air inside the box and the box itself, and that's what causes the feedback.
Yeah, see, I have no idea about. I have a girlfriend right now that's studying a Berklee course. She's doing a Berklee course, mm-hmm. and right now, like her current whatever she is, her current unit is about coils and magnets and all that stuff. And it's like that's a whole other monster. Have you ever been interested in that at all? Or I mean, it's just like kind of completely different.
Thing. I'm not.
It's almost like one or the other. I'm going to do.
I'm
going to wrap my brain around.
Right.
Because she asked me about it, or she doesn't really ask me. She'll tell me things, and I'll be like, yeah, you know, I have no idea why it's called a coil, what it does. And, I mean, it's a whole other monster.
I can tell you stuff about it. I've read about it because I have an interest in anything musical in terms of instruments and guitars.
Right.
But other than that, I you know, how it would relate to a classic guitar, which is what we're supposed to be talking about, instead of archtops and feedback.
It's insane, right?
We immediately have gone off into a never-never land.
A never-never land of electronics. And that's, I mean, I think it's just intimidating, the electronics. And, you know, that's the thing, is if you're a traditionalist, I think, and I am, I think we all are, I think this entire building, well, except for the upstairs, which is all jazzers. But as far as today, which is the Manus Guitar Festival, everybody is here to kind of celebrate tradition.
Right.
So in the interest of celebrating tradition, we were at the hole of the guitar.
Right.
Have you ever taken a guitar and manipulated that 3/3/8 hole to be something bigger? Or have you ever
thought
about that?
I've done a little of that.
Experimentation?
I don't know that I could tell you that I really heard massively different sounds come out of the box as a result of being larger or smaller. I know that the trebles were favored when I'd open the hole up. If I was making a small body guitar, I would use a smaller sound hole because that'll give it more bass, and it doesn't have – the bass is controlled mostly by the air volume, the amount of volume of air inside the box.
Yeah.
So the larger – the deeper the guitar is, the more air it holds, the more bass – it tends to produce.
Right. That's interesting.
So, so
because that's what a lot of people are manipulating the size and placement of the hole. What about placement of the hole? Is this the optimal place to place the hole, like right below the fretboard?
Yeah, I think it is.
Right.
Because it inhibits less of the top.
And you want the growth to happen in the bottom of the guitar. That's where the richness is going to come from. If you put the hole any lower than it is,
you can't put it any lower, right?
Because it'll just be like ping.
Well, I don't know what it would do, but it wouldn't work as well.
And it would also, it seems like it would compromise the structural integrity.
Yes, because that's where you want the strength or the lack of strength. Because the less strength you have in the lower bout of the top, the more movement there's going to be. Okay, so
you get too much movement, it's too muddy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you have too little movement, it's going to be too bright.
Right. Too little movement, too bright.
So that's one of the ways to control some of that. The other thing about weight is, especially in the lower bout on the top, if you have a light bridge and a light top, you'll get a louder – tend to get a louder instrument because the bottom moves quickly. As soon as you pluck the string, the top responds.
Yeah.
And it's that first response, that the front part of the envelope of the sound envelope. The more it's towards the front, the louder it tends to sound, and trails off faster. if you make it a little heavier, the sound won't be as loud, but it will tend to carry a little bit better.
Yeah. It'll carry better.
Yeah, tend to project a little bit better.
Yeah.
If you have all the sound up front, it's wow, and that's it. Sound's gone.
We need, and one of the things we need that we lack as guitarists is sustain. Right.
And part of the sustain
is our musical Achilles heel.
And that's one of the things that Ramirez did was to double the thickness of the sides by using two layers, and that enabled the overall strength of the guitar to be greater. Right. And he also used an ebony truss rod in the neck to make the neck stronger.
Who did Ramirez?
Yeah.
Back in the day, 1990.
Not Manuel Ramirez, the old man, and not his son, but the three.
Three is truss rod.
Three is truss rod.
So this guy's around in the 60s, 70s.
Segovia's 1A, Concert Ramirez, the top of the line Ramirez.
Was he the first truss rod dude?
I don't know who, Ramirez?
Yeah.
I don't think so, but maybe. Right. It could have been.
And it wasn't a metal truss rod.
No, it was ebony.
Just
ebony.
Right.
Denser, stronger than mahogany.
Mm-hmm.
Kono used two ebony truss rods.
Oh, he did?
One next to each other. So that was...
That affects the sound for sure.
Yeah, well, yeah. Everything affects the sound, and everybody has something that visually sticks out that you can point to and say, aha.
Do you use truss rods?
I use, yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I use an ebony truss rod. I also use one of my changes in terms of
the truss rod, everybody, is a rod that goes through the center of the neck to create stability, and sometimes some makers... Like Australian makers in particular use, metal to make it, and then it makes the guitar significantly louder.
Or composite,
right.
I use...
It goes through the center of the neck.
Can be the center of the neck. I do it in the center of the neck. I use two of them sometimes.
You know who did it first was the electric guitar makers.
Yes.
So that was something that we took from them, and it was a way of making it where you could adjust your neck on the fly.
The metal ones were.
Right. Yeah. You could actually screw it and make it change the action, which is the distance between the string and the frets.
Right.
You could make it smaller or larger based on increasing the bow
of the neck,
Right. with a rod that goes through the neck, tightening it, making the bow more like a happy face.
Right.
Lowering it, making the bow more like a sad face.
Right.
More like a sad face, strings are closer.
Right.
More like a happy face, strings are further away, but you're going to get less buzzing.
Yes.
Now, I had a disagreement with somebody the other day. All right. Now, I'm going to have you. You're going to be the judge on this.
Okay.
And she is magnificent. She is. She's probably the most enchanting person I've ever met. And she makes great toast with avocado. But she was under the impression that the actual tone quality was affected by the action, whereas I was like, no, the action is simply a matter of playability versus, fret noise, buzzing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sure, the tone is going to be affected by the fret buzzing, but does it actually affect tone quality, the distance of the strings to the fretboard, in your opinion?
You can play physically louder with a higher action.
Mm-hmm.
You can hit the string harder with less buzz, with no buzzing.
Right.
When the action's higher.
And that technically...
Concert people tend to have higher action so that they can play as loud as they want to and have great dynamic range.
And that does affect the... Yeah.
I don't know what's tone.
Yeah.
I'm talking volume. Mm-hmm. The difference in volume, being able to project your sound out to the back of the hall by playing louder, physically louder.
Right.
Does that make the sound better? I don't know.
But it does
tone,
have it. Yeah.
Tone is, here we get into the words to describe sound.
Right.
Warmth, volume.
Dry warmth.
Right. All of that is very difficult to use words to describe.
And tone is a very, I mean, that's true. Tone, when you think about it, is a very subjective term.
Yes.
And you know, in one sense, she's absolutely right, because the tone, of course, if you play the guitar louder, that's going to affect what's going on in that chamber frequency-wise. And right. if we can put a definition of what we're talking about in terms of the, in terms of this conversation with tone, the definition would be the frequency. What effect does it have on, like you said, the initial response and the response of the decay?
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's that. You know, however, you know, whatever. You know what I'm saying? It's just yeah. like so. So she, I think after you know now we discussed it. So I think that she's right and that I'm wrong.
Could be. could be, but I don't right. know that it's that hard and fast, you know?
No.
I like
you're being very balanced. You know what? You're a great judge. You're a great judge.
Balance is what it's all about.
Yeah.
You know, is. Some people want a loud sounding guitar. Yeah. Other people want a musical sounding
now,
guitar.
I know the truth. I know that I'm right, but what I'm doing what I'm doing is I'm
your
just,
truth.
I'm using you. I'm yeah. using you right now, and yeah. I think that's unfair.
Go right ahead.
Go ahead. Exactly. Hey, I talked about you on the show.
Uh-huh.
Will you go out on another date with me? Is uh-huh. what's happening right now.
Yeah, yeah.
So thank you, William, Bill. So as far as that's concerned, going back to the bracing, Lattice bracing. What do you yes. think that does to the sound? And you don't use it. You don't really necessarily condone it. If is that fair to say? I mean,
yeah, I
people
don't.
Can do whatever they want, but
that's
you
right.
don't want to do it.
I don't.
Now, why don't you want to do that? Lattice bracing
because
meaning like
the purpose
a lot of,
it, of
bracing.
The purpose of it is to strengthen a very thin top.
Mm. And okay. how does it work? How does Lattice bracing work? So Lattice bracing, is it double top?
No,
no.
It's a single. It's using a single top, and it's usually a millimeter, mm-hmm. sometimes less than a millimeter thick.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to put the kind of bracing I use on a top like that, it would look like a washboard
okay.
because you'd see every brace through the top. The top would be too thin to
right.
be using, you know, seven braces on.
Right.
You'd see every brace from the audience.
Yeah, I have a Lattice yeah. brace guitar, and one of the issues with it is just, yeah, it's all over, it's broken, you know, it's thin.
Yes.
It had
yes.
French polish on it, so that's worn off. That's all gone.
Right.
I don't know. That guitar is just, it's a skeleton. But, yeah, so that's the thing is when you don't,
well,
you don't have a bigger
guitar.
Well,
they're a skeleton to begin with.
They're a skeleton to begin with. Right.
Because, again, we get back to the thing of weight.
Mm-hmm.
The lighter the top is, the louder it is. The quicker it moves
uh-huh.
with the least amount of vibration from the string.
Uh-huh.
So that's the concept.
Doesn't eventually that just wear down, though? I mean, don't the guitars get
old fatigued?
Faster?
Well, that's the purpose of all of the lattice work, is the more braces you have, the stronger it is.
Right.
And the top is no longer a top in
a structural sense.
In a structural sense,
yeah.
It's more of a membrane.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was too young to understand that when
yeah.
I bought it.
Well, no, you
I made my decision.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
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 So
that's my thing with those. And they tend to sound monochromatic musically.
Yeah, yeah.
Double tops tend to do the same thing. All the notes kind of have a similarity to them.
Yeah, there's a balance to them. What's the guy's name? The Australian maker, Redgate.
Yeah,
yeah. My friend got one of his, and that's a very high end, very expensive, very
right.
you know.
Right.
People don't play it as much now. People have actually moved from those guitars, but I did notice that. I noticed that with his guitar, it was great.
Yeah.
The tone was great everywhere, but you know, when I'm playing a D on the first string, I want it to sound different. I want
yeah.
it to be a moment where
yes.
I'm in a part of the guitar that's singing in a particular way. I don't want to play the D in the fourth string open and then play my 10th fret D and have them both sound
same.
Kind of the same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's very, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not,
like, yeah.
There's no voice there.
No.
It's just
It's a very balanced guitar. That's a very beautiful, special thing. And that's a cool thing.
Right.
It's a neat idea. Is it something that everybody wants? I don't know. I don't have a guitar that's competitive in any way.
Yeah.
But it's like just looking at it, you know, just looking at what I would want objectively. Yeah, I don't think I'm getting that, you know, out of that kind of guitar. Now people have moved into the Connors. Everybody's playing Connor guitars. A lot of people are, you know, Fisk.
Right.
You know, Frank Wallace is playing one. Right. Zarya Menensis is playing one. Zyra. So all these people are playing these. And a Connor is a more traditional guitar. Is that true?
I'm not that familiar with his work.
I think
work.
I play one. I think it's pretty traditional.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty thick.
Okay.
You know, a lot of cedar
out
there floating around.
Yep. Yep. That's one nice thing about cedar is you can make it thicker, and it's springy enough, it's soft enough so that, and it's light enough so that you can make a thicker top.
Spruce is thicker? Than cedar?
Spruce is thinner.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah, but it's stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's...
Spruce is stronger.
Yeah.
So spruce
that's
is
why it takes longer to break in, too.
God, I have spruce. No idea.
Whereas cedar sounds almost as good as it's going to sound...
Off the floor.
...within 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. What do you... Do you have a preference
there? Use both.
Use both. Everybody uses both. You got to, because that's what the market... I mean, people...
That's right.
Everybody's got a different. Everybody's got a different opinion about it.
That's right. It depends on how you work the woods of the instrument.
It also depends on what you're playing at that time.
Right.
Are you playing Bach?
Right.
You might want to go with the spruce because you need the voices. You need the voices to have separation in a tonal way.
Right.
Whereas a cedar is, again, a little monochromatic, more monochromatic than spruce, but at the same time. Warmth out of the gate. You know what your guitar is going to sound like. You know what you're getting.
Tends to be louder.
Richer. If I may.
Yes. If warmth is richness.
Exactly.
But you have more upper partials with spruce.
And what's an upper partial?
That's when you have a tone and it's broken up into many notes. Mm. And there's high overtones and lower overtones, and they all blend into a voice, an overall voice for that note. And
that's interesting.
Cedar doesn't have that as much.
It doesn't. And now that you're saying that, that's interesting.
And that's interesting.
You know what I'm going to say?
Go ahead.
What were you going to say?
No, shoot.
Okay. Age of a human being.
Yeah.
The ability to hear those tones when you're a 25-year-old.
Right.
And then not hear those tones anymore when you're a 45-year-old. That's a real thing, isn't it? I mean, don't we end up... I remember when I was 10, I couldn't hear the bass in a Motley Crue song.
Okay.
I was like, I can't hear it. I remember saying that over and over again because I was like, I can't hear... I think Nikki Sixx play the bass in Motley Crue in a rock band. Couldn't hear it.
Right.
But now all I hear is bass.
No trouble,
All I hear is bass. You know, it's the first thing to come out in a song.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that makes dance music really exciting is when someone turns 20 and they're like, whoa, what is this thing? And it's in my body.
Rhythmic,
and I can feel it on the floor. And in my being younger, which was when I bought my Spruce, and now I think I would almost – definitely buy a cedar if it was between the two. If I had to make a decision without hearing a guitar, I'd be like, I need the warmth.
Yeah.
Whereas before there was like this like crystally sort of sound to it that I just don't hear anymore.
Right.
And I don't know if that's real or false or mumbo jumbo, but I have like heard that scientifically that's the case. That as we age, we
lose the
ability to process upper registers, upper frequencies, what do you call them? When there's a sound but you can't hear it?
I don't know.
Overtone.
Right.
Upper register
overtones. Series. Well, that's what this is all about.
That's what we're talking about. Yeah. So the higher the overtone. So there's more high overtone series. There's more color.
Right.
Overtone series with the spruce than there are in the cedar.
Yeah.
And that's something. What is your opinion about people that combine the two? Not about people, personally.
Yeah.
But about the process, like, have you ever thought about that, or is that something
I've
that you
seen
avoid?
It done? I've never heard a guitar that was made that way, but I know there's a few guys that would put cedar on the bass side and spruce on the treble side.
So they would actually the side,
right?
No.
Oh, I'm okay. Talking about you're talking about the top of the guitar itself,
right?
The one as you're looking at the guitar, the one on the left.
Oh, with the top three strings.
Right.
With strings one, two, and three.
Would be cedar. Cedar, and the spruce would be on the treble side.
Okay.
And
I think we got mixed up. So the bigger strings would be cedar.
Yeah.
The larger strings closer to my nose are going to be cedar.
Warmer, bassier, rounder, cedar.
Let's reinforce that. Yeah. And then the
and
top
then
strings.
And on the other side, the treble side, brighter, upper partials, trebly.
Uh-huh.
All right, I've seen guys try and get a guitar to respond with a broader palette of tone color by separating the two sides into cedar and spruce.
Huh.
All right, you can do the same thing with a double top.
Yeah.
You know, in that...
That's what I've seen.
Yeah.
I've never seen it where there's like a guitar cut in half with two different colors.
Yeah.
Just like, were you there for the show last night?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. We had a restaurant that we went to.
Alfonso was good for you. Good for you. Yeah. No, seriously, you can't go to all these shows. It's overwhelming. I've been to too many.
Yeah.
But Alfonso was wearing one brown shoe and one black shoe.
Uh-huh.
And what happened is that he packed two of the exact same shoes, but he packed the brown one and the black one. So he had one brown shoe, one black shoe. Very clear.
Cool.
And he didn't – I don't think – he didn't address it. I mean, I left – I think I saw – I did that. I did the intermission. I went right afterwards, and then I went to – and then after that, I was like – I sat through one more set, and there was one more set, and, you know, it would probably have been about 15, 20 more minutes, but I wanted to go, so I went. anyway, but the point is that I didn't hear him bring up the shoe thing, you know.
Uh-huh.
But so let's – so as far as, like, yeah, that bracing, I have seen – you know, the one on top of the other. I never played one, I don't think.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I how does that work? How is that going to – what is that going to do?
I don't know.
The idea is you're going to get both, but I don't see – you got to put one on top of the other.
And you mean a double top.
And have the bracing in between. You have a double top where you use both.
Yeah.
If you were using a double top like that, which one would get the actual top?
I would use spruce because it's more durable. Mm-hmm. But that's –
it's more durable.
Yeah, in terms of getting dinged and scratched, and it's a harder wood. Spruce is harder than cedar. Cedar's softer and will take a ding easier, or a scratch, a nail scratch or whatever, or your nail will go through the.
God, I had no idea. That was like completely
a pain in the butt to make. A cedar top guitar because of that.
You wake up in the morning and it's
really careful with it. Well, it doesn't split.
I had no idea. I would have thought it would have been the opposite.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have thought that the lighter, tighter end one. Well, no, that's actually, now that I think about it, of course. The more malleable wood is going to move slower and produce tone slower in the chamber, and then it's going to come out later. And the later it comes out, the heavier the sound, the warmer the sound.
Right.
So, yeah, I should have known that spruce would have been the not necessarily denser, but just stronger, less of vibrative, if that's a word. That's not a word, but I love it. Vibrant is a beautiful word that I just made.
I don't know if it's less vibrant. It moves less quickly than because of the lightness more than because of the greater strength.
Yeah.
But getting back to the overall sound and the sound hole and the braces and how everything works together, I look at a guitar and I see three things that need to be in balance with each other, and that's the top, the back, and the air volume, the amount of air. And the trick is to balance those three things so that you don't have
back air volume
and the air volume.
What's air volume?
The
amount
inside,
of air.
The amount of air inside the guitar.
Right.
When you sing into the sound hole, you'll get a certain note that will amplify when you hit it. With your voice.
Right, and that's not just the strings vibrating?
No, that's the inside volume of the Helmholtz response of the air volume.
It's called the Helmholtz.
That's what it's called. And so it's that note, whatever that note is, you don't want the back or the top to have the same note.
Right.
Okay. Right. If you do, the tendency is for that note to be a wolf note. When you hit that note on the guitar when you're playing it, that's the note that's going to pop out and have terrific volume. Because all three things, the top, the back, and the air resonance, all are at the same note. So if you break them up so that we're all different notes, like the top and the back, I try and separate them by at least a half a tone.
Mm-hmm. Half a tone?
Yeah, half, like G, G sharp.
Yeah.
F, F sharp.
Yeah.
In terms of the top and the back. And then the air volume resonance to be another note.
Uh-huh.
It's not important that it's close. It's important that it's not the same note as either the top or the back.
Right.
And if you do that,
so
you'll have a balanced guitar.
Yeah.
We tend to have a balanced
guitar. So you have to be able to sing in your guitar and get two different notes of equal volume. That's what you're looking for.
When you sing, when I sing in the guitar, that I the note that I get back that's louder or loudest is the air resonance note.
And that's what you're going to hear the most when you put the strings on, you get everything set up, you start playing, you're going to hear that note
when you play that note. That's one note. The other note will be the note that the top makes when you tap the top, when the instrument's together.
Okay.
Right. And the strings are not on it.
There's two things. One is where you sing into the guitar. What note is that? Jot it down.
Right.
Tap the guitar. What note is that? Jot it down.
Right.
Are they at least a half step apart?
Yeah.
Good.
And then the back, the same thing.
The back, the same thing. Right. Oh, you tap on the back.
Right.
And you sing.
Right.
Well,
right.
And what do you mean?
Okay. No singing.
No singing.
Just tapping the back.
What if you
tap the back of the guitar and your tone... Your device that measures sound will give you a note.
Okay.
And you want three different notes.
Three different notes is what you're going for.
Between the top, the back, and the sound. And the sound.
Does it matter? I mean, not does it matter, of course, but does it matter? Well, you know, for instance, like, you know, we're playing guitar music. So we're playing music that's an A, major, D, major, minor. I shouldn't have said major. A, D, E.
Yeah.
G.
Okay.
So I'm looking for one of those. I'm looking for something that I'm going to play that's going to sing. Again, you know, I happen to like the key of D. It's the first time I ever said that on the show. But the D, I think, is just generally on the guitar is my favorite key. So if I want that, should I be looking for that in the air resonance or on the two tappings?
No.
If I'm looking to buy a guitar?
No.
It doesn't matter which note it is.
No.
It just matters that there's something going on in between.
That they have
a distance.
Right. Right.
Three different notes.
Right.
Different notes. So you can actually do that. You can actually go to a guitar store or something. You can sing into the guitar, tap it, and then you can actually – that's a way to gauge whether the guitar is just at a starting point.
You'd have to stop the strings when you tap the top.
Because the strings are going to fuck with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
And you'd have to stop the strings when you tap the back.
Yeah.
But what you want is you don't want them all. This is really more for a guitar maker than
it would be for somebody.
Shopper.
Right.
Right. Right. Harder to tell in a shop with strings on the guitar and everything.
Yeah.
And also it's the other thing is when I'm picking woods out for a guitar, I'll tap the top and the back. And intuitively, if they sound kind of good together.
Yeah.
That would encourage me to use them both in the same guitar.
Yeah. Hell yeah. That's cool. Yeah.
So that's the other thing about tapping. You know, everybody says about tap tones and how important it is in making. I don't know how important it is. I don't know how much you can really tell. But I know when two pieces of wood sound good together. If I have a neck blank and when I'm handling it, just handling it in a quiet room, if I can hear it talking back to me, I like that.
Yeah.
If I can hear the sides talking back to me, I like that. That's what you're talking about. That's what the guitar is talking about to you.
Right.
And the idea is to use woods that respond to being handled, because that's exactly what's going to transmit the sound of the guitar with the strings in a concert hall.
Yeah.
And you're matching sounds one to the other. So there's an intuitive thing there that's not necessarily something that you can say there are any hard and fast rules about.
Yeah, sure.
You know, how do you get that? How do you get wood to sound that way? You cut it in January or February when all of the water is out of the tree. That's called winter cut wood.
So you cut the wood in the winter.
Right.
Oh, Jesus. So you have to do that. All that alpine spruce, they're like...
The logging, yep. Yep, they're cutting the trees down in the snow, and the snow makes it easier to haul them out.
Why? Oh, because it slides.
Okay. So that's the spruce and all the woods, for that matter. So that's number one, is you're cutting the wood in the winter when it's driest. That also makes it the more stable, because as it's already shrunk from being dried out from the winter winds and the sunlight without any heat, that piece of wood, when it's cut, will shrink and expand less. It'll be more stable,
yep,
size-wise. Yeah. So it'll also ring more.
Yeah.
When you tap it.
Okay.
If you take a piece of wood,
if it's dry,
you come down about a fifth of the length of the wood, right, and you hold it between your thumb and forefinger and tap it with another piece of wood, it'll ring, and that ring will sustain. It's like a bell, and that's the whole concept of a vibraphone. Well, not a vibraphone, but
those whatever they are, keys of a vibraphone,
marimba.
Of a marimba.
Yeah.
Right.
The wooden keys of a marimba.
Those things are loud.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're held 20% or so in from each end. All right. So the wood is free to vibrate.
Right.
Because those two points are nodal points. Those points don't move.
Is that what a nodal point is?
Yes.
A nodal point is a point that doesn't move, just in science. Yeah. Right.
Okay, and it's 20% in from each end. Mm-hmm. So that's
So that's amazing. So it has to be cut during the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And
age. In the old days, they would bring the wood down rivers into saltwater lagoons, and they would keep it there until they cut it.
And they would keep it in salt water.
Yeah, yep.
Where
the mills were usually at the end.
Like at the beach?
Yeah, at the end of the river.
Uh-huh.
And in from the end of the river, the salt goes quite a ways up the river. Like you get tides up halfway up.
But you're talking about beach area, not deltas.
No.
You have to get salt water, so you have to be at the beach.
No, because the salt moves up fresh water.
Okay. So there's an area where between the delta of a river and the beach, there's an area with salt water, and it's called Saltwater Lagoon.
Yeah.
And they would take it down from the mountains.
Right.
Down from the Alpine Mountains, down into the villages.
And they'd store it there.
Go down to the Mediterranean.
They'd store it there, and then they'd cut it when they had time, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would rack it and dry it. And
How would they store it? How long would they? How long would it be in the lagoon?
It would vary.
Why the salt?
Well, I'm saying that's where they stored it.
That's where they did it. Yeah.
It was happenstance, but the salt tends to leach out the minerals that are in the wood.
Is that good?
Yeah, that's great.
You want the minerals gone.
Yeah.
Because the minerals will decay the wood.
It'll make the sound decay in the wood because the wood's heavier than it needs to be.
Okay, so right now the salt water is sucking the things up, because that's one of the theories about what Stradivarius was, is that it got – that's one of the myths.
Right.
Is that a Stradivarius violin was kept on a ship, and the ship got stuck out, and they couldn't get the violins off the Stradivarius.
I got a better one than that.
What's the myth
about
Stradivarius? The story
is that he used to go up to Venice and buy the Venice
Stradivarius,
boatman.
For people don't know, is the legendary most expensive violins – in the universe. They're considered an acoustic miracle.
Right.
And they are worth millions of dollars and played by only a handful of people. And they're usually on loan from like the National Archives.
Right.
Okay, continue.
Right. He used to go, it's thought, to Venice and buy the oars from the Venice boatmen.
yeah.
that were broken. And they would break because there were highly figured pieces of wood. Why? Because Venice and Italy was always at war with the Carpathians and with the Eastern Europeans. So the Eastern Europeans, where the oars were made, mm-hmm. the spruce oars, they would send them only highly figured wood
yeah.
for oars.
Yeah.
So they couldn't use them on the war boats to use for speed and pulling hard and going fast.
Yeah, they couldn't use them?
Couldn't use them.
Why?
Because they
Why?
Would break.
Because they would break.
Because they were highly figured. The grain was going...
Oh, okay.
The fiddleback grain in the wood
right.
weakens the wood.
Right. So figured means like wavy
yes,
parts in the grain of
in
the wood.
Grain of the wood.
A more stable thing that would be used for an oar would have grain that goes
straight
like an arrow.
Right.
Grain of the wood
stronger,
would go straight. If you have something
right.
wavy, it's like a pretty, like
right.
the back of a Bernabe.
Right, right, right.
Right. So these kind of things, you know, that wouldn't make a good oar.
No.
Okay, so you have a
so
wavy grain oar. Yeah.
He'd go up and buy the broken oars
uh-huh.
that were in and out of the water all the time. Salt water.
So all that beautiful, all those
and
minerals were
figured,
sucked out. Right. Highly figured meaning wavy.
Wavy.
Wavy
fiddleback.
Grain. Fiddleback.
It's what's called fiddleback maple is highly figured wood.
Mm-hmm. Is and that what they're made out of is maple?
Yeah.
Violins are made
yep.
out of maple?
Yeah.
Oh, great. I'm sorry. I didn't know
yeah.
that. I don't know so much.
Violins are made out of spruce tops and maple backs. They did use occasionally other
Is that
woods.
True? That's always true?
Yeah.
Why is it
pretty
all dyed? It's all dyed uniformly, though.
Yeah, pretty much. It's colored.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Sycamore, English sycamore, also looks like the same kind of wood, mm-hmm. but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And they use that also. The
yeah.
English use sycamore
right.
for violins. But
so
it's in the maple family-ish.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know if it is technically, but it's sort of. They look very similar.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's...
That's the Stradivarius. That's another Stradivarius myth.
Right, right, right.
But I like that one. That one sounds a little more
yeah.
realistic.
And another one was he'd go around in the woods.
Because I have no answer for why the boat
with a
was
mallet
there.
And rap on trees.
Right.
To sound the find the best sounding.
Right.
I don't know if that's true.
A mallet.
But, yeah.
But as far as, so, you know, where we left off was the actual, you know, the amount of time that you're supposed to give it. Once you haul it out of that salt water,
right.
which is for an indiscriminate amount of time,
but
it's
any
up to
wood,
the maker.
Not just that wood, but
mm-hmm.
not just the spruce or the maple, but any wood for an instrument.
Is wood still kept in salt water?
I doubt it.
We no longer get minerals out of the wood that way.
I would tend to doubt it.
Okay.
I know what they talk about as sinker wood. Have you ever heard that?
No way. Dude.
In guitar making, there's wood that is sought after by some makers. Not me. I don't buy into this myth. As sinker wood, which is wood that sank in usually the lakes. They would move the wood through the Great Lakes to places to mill it, or from the forests
mm-hmm.
into the lake system and then to a mill and then cut it. And if it would stay in the lake too long, it would get waterlogged and sink to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're discovering all this wood that sunk that they're taking out, and it's a lot of it is first growth, old growth wood that no longer exists. And they're taking it out and drying it and cutting it and finding that it's because it's been soaking for so long, it's free of a lot of the mineral structure.
For 100 years.
100 years. 150
More.
Years.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And these are in the Great Lakes, in our Great Lakes?
Yes, yes. And a lot of steel string makers are using this stuff. It's called sinker wood, and they're using that.
Oh, my God. Well, that's also, are the Great Lakes salty?
No.
No,
I don't think so.
But still, water.
Water. Right.
So it's the water's in there, and it's just, God. Okay, so that wood exists after that. I mean, I would just think it would just turn into mush and just turn
yeah,
into mud.
Yeah, I would too. But
it's good wood.
Cedar is one of the best in terms of stability and long lasting.
Wow.
Even they say you can make a post, a fence out of cedar and put it in.
Unless it's a guitar top, then it then you can poke it easily. Right? So I'm just strong in numbers.
It's strong.
Yeah.
But it's resistant to water damage.
Ah, right.
Redwood, cedar, that's why they use it for decks.
Right.
Because it lasts longer. Pine would just disintegrate in no time.
Yeah, well, pine is the cheapest thing. That's why my IKEA furniture in my new apartment, is all glorious pine, and it's cracking under any sort of thing. Right.
Further proof that you only get what you pay for.
You only get what you pay for. And it's a $45 bed frame, and a lot of people don't even have bed frames, so I'm a lucky guy.
There you go.
But I absolutely love it. Quickly, before we get on, how long is the wood stored in your shop?
I don't use anything that's not 10 years old or older.
Okay. Where do you get your wood?
I get my wood anywhere I can.
Right.
Okay. It's one of those things that if you come across it and you can buy it, you borrow the money and you buy it.
Right.
Because it doesn't come across along always easily.
Right.
And that's okay.
I like this though. You're like, you know what? I got something to say.
Let me tell you something, son. Yeah.
You were going to the right of the microphone to explain your point better, which was great. I mean, I loved it, but I brought you back home. Visually, I was like, he's making a visual cue.
Yeah. So I used to run, like, for instance, I have some friends who make piano hammers. They make replacement piano hammers because the piano hammers wear out and have to be replaced. Ronson Piano Hammer, it's called, in Boyceville, New York. They are friends with Steinway and all of these piano companies. And when Steinway decides to make a change, they're hip to it because they talk among each other.
Mm-hmm.
They're piano people.
Right.
And when they make a change, let's say in bridge capping, which is the top part of the bridge of a piano where the strings go across it. Okay? They made a change in piano bridge capping, treble bridge capping, from maple to boxwood about 40 years ago. And they had all of this maple that was like primo, cut in January, aged properly.
10 years. More.
More.
Right.
This stuff, when I got it, was 40 and 50 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, and treble bridge capping, not pretty, not figured, had to be straight grained because it had to be strong.
Right.
But I made some instruments out of that stuff that were phenomenal, and I got it because Steinway made a change in their design of treble bridge capping, and I was hip in the chain to that having happened, and I got to see the wood and pick through the wood and be able to pick all the quarter sawn maple out of that.
Right.
Maybe 20 pieces of it, but it was enough to make probably 10 guitars. And a bunch of dulcimers, and who knows what else I made out of it. I don't even remember.
You make dulcimers?
But I make dulcimers. I make lutes. I make ouds.
You do?
Yep.
Oh, I got to come to your shop. You're in Woodstock?
Yeah.
Does Fred ever come by?
Fred lives there.
Fred must hang out a little bit once in a while, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. You know what? We're almost done, but what I want to do is I want to talk about your history a little bit.
Okay.
Even though, this is just, we could do this.
Michael and Laura.
Michael and Laura. Now, one of the things about you is I think you had listened to one of the early shows and you had reached out and you just wanted to talk. You just wanted to say, hey, good job. And by the way, I know Michael and he was one of your teachers and he was.
I was Michael's first student.
You were Michael's first student
when he was in 16. The 60s. He was 16.
Now, what are you? Well, you're the same age as him, probably.
No, I'm going to be 76.
Okay, so he's what, 60?
He's 60, I think,
Oh, oh my God.
So he was 16 years old.
And he gave you a lesson?
And he gave me a bunch of lessons.
How much did you pay him?
$10 an hour.
You made a killing. You got
at that time, $10 was a little not.
What are you talking about? It's amazing.
Yeah.
People are still trying to get me to teach for $25 an hour.
Yeah, but it's not.
I want to slap them in the face.
But it's 2016
and
now.
And he's 16. You know, that's damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the $1 million.
Yeah, and money was worth a lot more then. You could buy a Volkswagen for $2,000.
$10 an hour is probably $25 now. You probably gave the kid $25 an hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can buy a Volkswagen for what? Two?
About $2,000 then.
Like a Beetle?
I bought a Beetle for $1,490, my first Beetle. Brand new.
Oh, man. I just... I mean, was it,
sorry.
So $1,400, but even back then, that was cheap.
Yeah, yeah.
Even back then, yes. That was like a $5,000
oh, yeah.
car.
Oh, yeah, and 45 miles to the gallon at 21 cents a gallon.
Man, you had the Beetle. You had guitar lessons from a 16-year-old. You're living in Woodstock. Are you some kind of a hippie?
No.
But as far as the, taking those lessons, so you were his first. You were his first student ever.
Yes.
1960. He said 1962, 67,
67, probably.
Summer 66. Of Love, man.
Yeah.
So how old were you? He was 16. And that would have made you like 30.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What made you take a lesson from a 16-year-old kid?
I heard him sit down on a chair with a guitar that was bigger than him and play the 20 source studies that Segovia had written out one after the other from memory at 14. That was my first meeting of
he doesn't, you know, he is such a an incredible musician.
Yeah, yeah.
And he is such a ham.
Yes.
Kind of like me.
Yeah.
Where it's like you kind of can go like, oh, yeah, he's Michael. He's just, you know, he's an outgoing guy.
Yeah.
He's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
He's kind of kooky.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you hear these stories or you see him play or, you know, you study with him.
Right.
And you're just like, and he wasn't, my principal teacher was Fred.
Yeah.
But. You know, obviously with Michael every week. You know, I was getting coachings from him, and I did the Wednesday classes with him.
Right.
So we were, you know, we were close. And it's people like that that you forget. You just kind of, you know, you almost start to
forget just how good he was.
Forget to respect them
the
way that they deserve to be respected. Then you see a concert, you're just like, that is a virtuoso.
Right.
He is a virtuoso.
In fact, when he was 20, he turned to me one day and he said, you know how much harder it is to be a young, up-and-coming guitarist than it was to be a 16-year-old virtuoso? And it was. I mean, I saw him play Carnegie Recital Hall at 15, I think it was.
Yeah.
Played the Chaconne.
Yeah. And did you go to...
And Clean. Yeah.
Playing the Chaconne at 15.
Yeah.
Oh, man. God.
And that was something then. That was the premier showpiece.
Okay. Yeah.
The stuff they're playing today is all came up a number of steps since then.
I mean, right, you know, right.
Some of the stuff that they were playing then as concert work, they're just...
Well, Chaconne's amazing.
Yeah.
Chaconne is just it's the best. It's just the best.
Yeah.
For me, you know what I mean? Yeah. Pound for pound, I can't. I can listen to that played over and over again. The PFA...
Yeah.
Not really. I get kind of bored. You know, but that for me, you know, whatever. The drama.
Yeah.
The drama, mama. Right. I'm into it. Anyway, well, you know what, Bill? That was great. Is there anything else you want to, you know, say before we take off? Or, I mean, you're in Woodstock. You're definitely.
I'm in Woodstock. I'm available.
William Kramer Henderson.
Harrison. Yes.
Now, William Henderson is the maker of my guitar.
He was a dentist. Had mentioned that the other day. Yeah,
he was a dentist. He doesn't make guitars. He only made a handful of them. He gave one to Adam Holzman.
Uh-huh.
I bought it from Adam Holzman.
Uh-huh.
And I've had it since 2000.
Uh-huh.
So, but you're William Kramer Henderson.
Harrison.
And you're actually Googleable.
William Kramer Harrison.
Will. Present.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah,
well, anyway, so, you know, I know the people will look you up. That was an incredibly informative interview. That was one of my favorites. Thanks so much for joining me.
Okay.
All right, Bill. See you at the festival.
Be well.
Guys, that does it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I absolutely adore this guy. Maybe I'll even buy a guitar from him when I buy a guitar, which is never. I will be back with Jennifer Tobridge, educator extraordinaire, next time. Enjoy your week, and I will try to behave myself at school.
school sucks. You know, always has, always will. Talk to you guys soon.